and welcome to Comic Boom, the Comics and Education podcast. If you're an educator interested in using comics in the classroom, then this is a podcast for you. In fact, if you're interested in comics and education in any way, this is the podcast for you. My name is Lucy Starbuck-Bradley, and each week I'll be joined by an academic, a fellow educator, a librarian, or a creator of comics to explore their journey in comics and provide some insight to inform your practice. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Burgess, an illustrator and comics creator. Bex has produced a huge range of webcomics, including a fantastic comic about autism called Understanding the Spectrum, which would definitely be of interest to educators and is available free to download from their website. You can find details in the show notes about that. Most recently, they created a middle grade graphic novel, Speak Up, which we talk about in this episode a lot. There's a lot of chat about the importance of representation of autism in children's literature and some great insight into Bex's process as a comics creator and their experiences as an autistic person looking for characters they could relate to as a child reader. I found this a really fascinating, eye-opening conversation. Here's what Bex had to say. Hi, Bex. How are you?
I'm right. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah. We always like to start the podcast with asking our guests to cast their mind back to when they first started to become aware of comics, to start to read them, maybe even start to create them. What was your entry point into the comics world?
Basically, Japanese comics, because I grew up during the huge Pokemon. When Pokemon was like really, really big.
Yeah.
And everyone was obsessed with it.
Love Pokemon. So was it the actual Pokemon? Was it the comics? I came to Pokemon through the TV though, really. There was the cartoons for me.
Yeah, yeah. Through the TV series. And then through that, I discovered like anime and manga. And I wasn't really like into comics before then, because there wasn't really comics aimed at girls around that time, but manga had lots of stuff kind of more aimed at people like me. So that's pretty much how I got into comics, and I pretty much exclusively read Japanese comics for a really long time, till comics started expanding, you know, everywhere else in this world.
And how old were you at that point when you first got hold of your first manga?
I want to say I was 11. It was Sailor Moon was my first ever comic.
And what is it that, when you say there weren't any before that that kind of appealed to you or felt like they were made for people like you, what was it that was drawing you in?
Lots of different things. Like, the art style was really pretty and cute. And at the time, you either had Marvel Comics or Beano Comics, and neither of those are pretty or cute. They're kind of like, you
very
know,
true.
Yeah, like either big muscly men or kind of like, you know, sort of like gag strip kind of stuff. So manga was appealing because you had cool costumes and female characters and really nice artwork and more emotion-based stories focusing on drama and emotion rather than action. So yeah, it was like all of those things that made manga really cool. If you're an 11-year-old girl anyway.
I'm aware of Sailor Moon. I don't know what Sailor Moon looks like. I've seen the artwork and things like that, but I've never actually read a Sailor Moon. What would I be getting myself into if I picked up a copy?
It's part of a whole genre that we really liked as kids called Magical Girl, which is sort of like, it's a bit like superhero with a hidden identity, and Sailor Moon is sort of a hidden identity kind of thing. But she's doing romance at the same time, so rather than it just being action, it's tied in with romance or school relationships with your friends and stuff like that. That's how I describe it. It's a mix between superhero and romance drama genre.
Cool, that's really interesting. We're going to go on to talk about your book Speak Up later on, and there's a few parallels there from things that you've been in terms of education and your time at school. Was comics part of that, or was it very much something that you did at home? How did the two cross over, or were they always very separate?
They were kind of separate to a point. Comics were kind of frowned upon when I was in school, especially Japanese stuff for some reason. I don't know why, but art teachers hate Japanese comics. I have no idea why that is. So, like, in school at least, they'd try and stop you from drawing comics. Both in uni and college and school, they always discourage drawing comics specifically. So it was pretty separate. And the way that I got into comics was making comics. Was to go to small press conventions where people just make their own stuff. At the time, it was very small, so I joined like a little group of people who are about 10 years older than me, which was amazing because then they teach me and my sister how to make comics and how to draw and just give us tips in general. So I learned everything through the indie small press zine kind of circles as opposed to at school. And then at school, most of art school, even in uni, it was very much like trying to make you not do comics at all. So I learned nothing about comics from there at all.
So it's all self-taught and learning from people who are in that scene. And what do you think could have been done differently to try and make that less of a divide? What would you have liked to have happened?
I think it'd be nice if teachers had just been more encouraging, or I think more open-minded is probably the thing. We could spend ages talking about why comics are really downplayed in school, especially here in the UK. Like, they're not really considered a thing over here. I don't feel like they are either. I don't know if that's your experience, but...
Yeah, I think it can really vary, but I think I'd say on the whole, they're definitely outside of the norm to be looked at within a lesson. You'll get occasional educators, and some of which we'll speak to on this podcast, who are really passionate about it. And then in those particular schools, if you're lucky enough to go to those schools, wow, you've got a great opportunity. But often they're misunderstood, and because of that, they're kind of something to do more to do in your own time rather than to bring in into the school day.
I think misunderstood is the right word, because I remember having this trouble in school as well, even early on in school. I think they're just, comics are a bit stereotyped as to what they are. So unless you've read the whole range that's out there, unless you understand what's out there and the kind of stories that are being told, I think you just make an assumption about it and think we can't use this in a educational setting, or it won't enrich kids in any way, so you just sort of ignore it or try and downplay it and try and get kids interested in, I think, in what I consider like high art or fine art. That was my experience anyway. It was sort of like comics is the lowbrow thing, and if you want to better yourself, then you need to be interested in other things.
Yeah, I spoke to Hattie Earle, who's a academic at Sheffield Hallam University, for one of these episodes, and she was talking about how that's kind of embedded with the history of comics as well, which is really, really interesting. And I think the more we understand that, the more we unpick it, the more we can kind of overcome those misconceptions.
It does feel like it's changed. Like, it feels like it's changed a lot since I was a teenager. So give it, like, not very long, and it would probably be completely different.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an upward curve happening here. I was really interested in your process. How do you create your comics? Do you work digitally? Do you work in traditional media? Do you do scripts and then create your visuals?
A mixture of things, depending on what I'm working on. For my published comic, they need a script, or my editor needs a script, because no one can understand my sketchy thumbnails that I normally do. But I really like to draw it all out first in little miniature comic pages to get the pacing right. And then even before that, when I'm just thinking of the story, it's kind of like mostly just rough notes. And then I'm just doodling little faces and writing down snippets of conversation. And then I turn that into the mini comic pages that only I can read. And then if I'm working on something where an editor isn't involved, I just draw straight out from those little sketches. But if there's an editor involved, then I meticulously go through my notes and create the script from there. I don't do the dialogue on the fly. I have a rough idea of what people are going to say, but most of the time I do that in the moment as well, because as long as I've got the reactions in the faces, it just feels more natural to kind of do it in the moment as I'm writing it out. So I don't super plan that until like it's there with the image, if that makes sense.
So you're then thinking about what the people would say in that moment more than sort of trying to preempt it.
Yeah, like obviously I have a idea of what they're going to say, because you still need to do the pacing and everything and have the little beats, but the kind of like the little details in dialogue, I don't do it until the moment. Otherwise, it feels a bit less natural somehow. I want to do it as it's coming out of my head. But I definitely need visuals. I'm a very visual person, so I can't do anything without having, like, expressions there with it. I can't just write it without some sort of visual next to it.
We've kind of answered my next question. My next question was going to be, do you think you could tell these stories in other ways, or is the combination of image and words, like, absolutely essential for you?
Yeah, I can't. I don't feel like I'm a good writer. Like, I'm not good at writing, I don't think. I'm good at comics, but not writing. They feel really, like, entwined together. Because I've been doing it for a really long time, like, because I've been drawing comics for so long, I just, like, can't separate them somehow.
I wanted to talk to you in some detail about Speak Up, which I just really love and found really emotional. We'll talk about that later in a minute. Honestly, I was getting teary at one point. I'll tell you about it. It might not be a point that you think that I would. I don't know. I'm interested to know what your reaction is to that. I hesitate to ask this because it sounds like a bit of a boring question, but I do think it's a boring question that has interesting answers. So what inspired you to write that story? Why was that a story that you really wanted to tell? Maybe you could give a little summary of the story to people who might not have read it who are listening.
Okay, Speak Up is about a girl called Mia, who's 12, and she's autistic and therefore gets very overwhelmed in certain social settings, like school, and is very shy and has what you call selective mutism, where she can't talk in certain situations. And so it means that at school, at least, she kind of comes across as really quiet and shy, and, like, no one knows anything about her, and all the kids at school kind of make fun of her, and she's a bit isolated. But then on the internet, she's kind of like this singer that's going viral online, but because she doesn't have any confidence in herself, she's kind of, like, got a secret identity going on, so her online persona, no one knows who that is in real life. And the story is kind of about that double identity thing, and, like, some kids in school all love the online persona, but they don't realise that it's Mia. And, yeah, there's just all this story that kind of unfolds around that. I made it because I'm autistic, and I just remember when I was a kid never relating to any characters whatsoever in any kind of stories or cartoons or whatever. And I think I had so little confidence when I was a kid and had a lot of anxiety problems, I guess. I was very, like, overwhelmed and anxious all the time. And I know it would have helped a lot if I'd seen characters like myself just kind of, like, feeling overwhelmed by the kind of stuff that I felt overwhelmed by. Because when you're autistic, you're so sensitive to stuff that you feel kind of alone in that, or I did anyway as a kid, because you just sort of feel like you have to get over it because everyone else seems to be dealing with normal everyday things so well. And you, especially when you get to a teenage kind of level, like, you feel kind of ashamed of yourself and, like, I feel terrible that I can't deal with stuff in the same way that other kids can. I think I just would have loved to have seen stories with autistic characters when I was a kid. It just would have, like, made me feel better about myself. So that's pretty much the reason I wrote it, and specifically the kind of themes that I went for.
And did you find it was a cathartic experience?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know, all the stuff that I've written in the last 6 years or so has been kind of, like, themed around autism, and it's all been quite cathartic to process stuff that I didn't really have words for when I was a kid, because I wasn't diagnosed as autistic when I was a kid. So it was nice to process various experiences.
And then must be benefits as well from a reader's perspective in people who aren't autistic reading that and maybe gaining some understanding and some awareness of what that might feel like or what other people in their class might be experiencing.
I hope so. Yeah, I do hope so. I got a really nice message from someone the other day, from a parent, who was like, oh, this made me think differently about how I treat my autistic child. So that was kind of amazing.
That's super interesting, because it was actually, that was the, so the mum character for me in the book was when, I think it might be because I'm a mum, and, well, it definitely is because I'm a mum, and I felt really, yeah, I felt really emotional by the mum's journey, because I feel so often in children's or writing for younger people, adult characters are quite one-dimensional. They're kind of like good or they're bad. And Mia's mum in this story, well, all the characters are really multidimensional, but Mia's mum, she's allowed to make mistakes and then come back from those and realize her mistakes and become a better support for her child. And that kind of journey for the mum, I felt like that was really unusual to see that in a book for young people. And when she had a moment of realization about how she'd been treating Mia, that made me quite emotional.
That's really sweet though. I was thinking of my mum, who I think had really good intentions when I was younger, but she just didn't understand me, so she just sort of like pushed me way too much, but you know, with all the best intentions. So that's definitely where her character was coming from. But I've met lots of parents who just didn't realise, because there's no information available for them, and they don't realise that they're just trying to do their best. So they're just like, someone that's not autistic, so how are they supposed to know? Like, I barely know how neurotypical people work. Like, you can't expect it to be both way around. I think you just need a little bit of compassion for people that are just trying to do their best. Like, if you get to just have a bit of compassion there.
Social media is also not the bad guy in this story as well, which is something that it often can be painted at. It's quite different to the sort of rhetoric that we often hear around social media and young people engaging in social media, because it gives Mia an outlet. But it's nuanced again, isn't it? It's nuanced. There are some things in the story which might not be seen as so positive with the social media, but it gives her an outlet to be, I don't want to say someone else, but a different side of herself that maybe other people don't see because of her anxiety. Is that something that you found, is that coming from personal experience around like, using social media?
I really don't think kids should be on social media.
That's interesting.
I don't think anyone should be on social media until they're like 16, personally, but I'm like, oh, well, it's a fictional story, so whatever. I just don't think it's actually healthy for you. I think you need like a space to not grow up without social media. I just don't think it's good for you. But I grew up before social media, so I grew up in kind of like the sort of space in between that, where you could post, I could post artwork online and like express myself, but not have all the terrible things that come with social media, where you have like, you know, thousands of people judging you.
What sort of things do you read? We talked about your where you started in reading comics. What sort of things do you read now?
Yeah, I read everything. Like, I'm really into picture books at the moment as well, because I just suddenly realised about 3 years ago that picture books have the most amazing artwork. So, like, as an artist, I just keep buying more and more and just stare at it. I barely even, like, read the picture books. I just stare at the artwork. And then I continue to read loads of comics. I think my favourite Western comics at the moment are kind of like middle grade, like the stuff that I'm writing, really. I just really like the art styles in middle grade comics. And I still read a lot of Japanese comics as well. But I'm reading all sorts of stuff.
And you get inspiration from what you read as well?
Like, this sounds weird, but I think generally my inspiration for most stuff comes from like where something doesn't exist yet and I want to make it, if that makes sense. See, story ideas only pop into my head if I'm like, huh, I wish this would exist. You know? Yeah, I think maybe a lot of comic artists are like that probably, because it's quite quick and easy to just bash out stuff. It's kind of like a very immediate sort of thing, especially with web comics. So I think probably a lot of webcomic artists are coming from a space of like, this thing doesn't exist and I'll make it.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast. I'd like to end with a couple of takeouts, main things that you would like to leave educators thinking about a couple of points, maybe?
I mean, my main thought is I think it is good to, like, encourage kids to get into comics if they show an interest, because for me personally, comics is a really good area, and webcomics and small press, especially for me, is a really good area for finding diverse stories and stuff that maybe you're not getting in mainstream media. Like, I feel like I'm quite lucky that my book has got published, because I don't see that much autistic themed stuff anywhere, but I do see a lot of that stuff in small press. So I think if you encourage kids to get into small press comics, then they'll be able to learn about people that they never knew existed, and like grow that empathy for other kinds of people. I think that definitely happened with me when I was younger as well, and like I've met so many different kinds of people in small press, which I probably wouldn't have if I just kind of stuck with mainstream comics. So I think it's a good space to learn that kind of stuff if you are someone from a marginalized background as well. Then you can find more relatable stories through small press as well.
And from a really practical point of view, just for people, if people don't know, where can they access those kind of small press comics? Where's the best place to go and try and access some of those if they'd like to find some of the people they work with?
So obviously online you have Tapas, I think is a great, and Webtoon, kind of like the two big webcomic websites. But also in real life, most comic conventions have artist alleys where you'll have small press artists like sharing stuff, and you definitely get a wide range of things that are both for adults and kids. So especially if you go to somewhere like Thought Bubble, I think is the best for having comics that are aimed at all ages. I'd say that those, if you go to like London Comic Con, Thought Bubble, that you could pick up those of physical small press comics. And also go against my personal point of view and get kids online. and read web comics. But you do get web comics for kids, like, which I didn't even realise, but someone was telling me the other day that you get a whole website dedicated to webcomics aimed specifically at kids, which is kind of awesome. So those exist as well, apparently.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I've never been to Thought Bubble. I really, really want to go.
It is so good. Like, there's so many different kinds of stuff there. It's nice because it's not just one thing. Like, London Comic Con is a bit more focused on certain kinds of artwork, but Thought Bubble just has everything. Like, it just has so many different kinds of stories and artists. It's amazing.
The last thing that we like to end the podcast on, I kind of say we, like I'm three people here, it's just me, that I like to end the podcast on is a book recommendation, a comic recommendation, a graphic novel. If we were to add one thing, could be for an adult, could be child readers, whatever, just let us know what age you think it's suitable for. What should we add to our to-be-read pile today?
Oh,
what would you recommend?
Oh, my favourite is Emma by Karu Mori. It's not... So it's set in Victorian London, but it's not Jane Austen's Emma. It's a different Emma. But it's my favourite comic because, to me, it just embodies everything that's great about comics. It delves into the characters in a very deeply, so it's quite psychological, but not in an obvious way, which I really like. It has all the characters have lots of different layers. The pacing in it is very cinematic, which is also a thing that I especially like in comics. And there's lots of silent storytelling, which is another like classic comic kind of thing that you can't get in any other kind of storytelling, you know, where there's no words being said, but there's loads going on, like, just with interactions between the characters. And it's just like, it's a really beautiful comic as well. Like, I just totally recommend it.
That sounds absolutely brilliant. I'm going to check that out. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming today. It's been brilliant to hear you talk. Yay. I absolutely loved your book.
Thank you.
It's been really, really great to talk to you. So thank you so much for coming along.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really nice.
Thanks so much to Bex for taking the time to speak to me. We were both a bit ill, actually, during that recording, but, you know, we powered through, heroes that we are, for the love of the podcast. I'm very glad that we did, because that was such an interesting conversation. And it just highlights that having that breadth of experience and perspectives in your book collection and in your curriculum is so, so key. And the work of neurodiverse creators and books with neurodiverse characters is a really key part of that. Speak Up is an excellent book for Upper Key Stage 2 and Key Stage 3 and beyond, I would say. Very much recommended. The recommendation from Bex of Emma by Kari Mori is a 16+ recommendation. I haven't actually read it, but that's what the internet tells me in terms of suitability, and I will believe it for want of any better information from myself. I'm also going to recommend a book myself this week. I feel like doing that. I'm going to recommend a middle grade graphic novel, Lightfall, by Tim Probert. I know many of you will have that in your classrooms. It is an absolutely epic book. First of a series, so cinematic, a fantasy story with absolutely stunning imagery. I just love the images in that book. The quality of light is breathtaking, as well as it's got really interesting characters and a gripping adventure story as well. So there really is all of the bases covered. I've chosen this one though, because although they're very different, there are some really clear parallels, I think, that could be made between Lightfall and Speak Up, even though they're set in very different worlds. Particularly, what I'm thinking of is the visual way in which anxiety and nervousness is depicted in the images, and I think there's some really interesting comparisons that could be made between the two books. So that's something to watch out for if you're reading either one of those or both over the next few weeks. This is the end of the podcast. Thanks again to everyone who's been engaging on Twitter, who's been leaving reviews, who's been tuning in to listen every week. It's absolutely brilliant, the reception that the podcast has been having. I did promise on Twitter to do a shout out to everyone who is listening to this podcast whilst walking their dog. So yeah, shout out to the comic loving dog walkers out there. If you have been listening, it would be great for you to share that on your social media platforms so we can bring more listeners in. You can also include me or just get in touch if you've got any questions or things that you would like me to ask people. My Twitter handle is @Lucy_Bradley, so please do reach out if you've got anything that you'd like to say. I would love to hear from you. That's it for now. You've been listening to Comic Boom. Until next week, goodbye.